climax or the novel, motion or the turning point of journey, Indian art takes a dramatic turn during the early days of the first millennium. West meets East. If you like my podcast, don't forget to press the bell icon and do follow me to enjoy the journey of the history of art. Let me now throw some light at a strange transformation that happened in Indian art, or rather Buddhist art of the time. Classically, in Indian art, a story is narrated through a painting without any break. The depiction is a continuous narrative of some events. This means if a tiger is killed by a hunter, then the tiger and the hunter, as well as the arrow, would be shown multiple times on the canvas or the rock as the event keeps progressing, more like the way the animation movies are made. But the Western approach had always been focused on a frozen moment, a dramatic or climatic moment of transition. For instance, if someone is running, then the runner will not be depicted 10 times along his track, but will be shown only once in a posture that would imply that the subject is in motion. As we see some of the early Sanchi reliefs, we find that narrative better. Look for the image of the relief, Battle for the Relics of Buddha. You will notice a story in movement. But interestingly, as time passed by, a couple of things happened. Around 1st century BCE, Mahayana Buddhism began to gather momentum in popularity. The fundamental difference between Mahayana and original version of Buddhism may be explained as follows. The goal of the original form of Buddhism, called Theravada Buddhism, was to attain Nirvana for an individual and thereby escape the clutch of the mortal torment of greed, anger, lust, and so on. But once Nirvana is achieved, the individual becomes a Buddha beyond the realm of the suffering souls on earth. Mahayana Buddhists considered this to be a selfish motive, and hence they believed that an individual should thrive to get Nirvana and become a Bodhisattva. Bodhisattvas did not go beyond the realm of the suffering world of flesh and bones. They stayed here, right among the people, to alleviate the pain of others. Now, the consequence of bodhisattvas staying in human form led to the possibility of worshipping them. Hence, they could be captured in a sculpture or statue. But then, the Indian tradition was not to depict any frozen moment. Interestingly, when some broken piece of narrative relief is displayed in any museum, it does not make much sense. It looks as if you are reading just a page of a thick novel that lost the rest of its previous and the following bunch of pages. Ironically, we Indians have strayed so distant from our past that during a group exhibition few months back, when I suggested that a series of paintings by an artist be displayed close to each other, the manager of the famous gallery objected angrily, saying, "In my gallery such nonsense is not permitted. We have a rule in place. If it does not suit you, you can choose to leave." I tried to make him understand that a narrative would lose its meaning if it were mixed up with other unrelated works. Anyhow, as for the radical transformation, we suddenly find that sculptures of Buddha begin to appear. It is not only the emergence of Mahayana Buddhism, but also a few other things of complex nature. Of course, the primary influence had been the Greeks absorbed in the mainstream of the local population. Even if they did not enjoy much military or political prowess anymore, yet they had something to give to the Indian culture in exchange of what Indian subcontinent infused into them. One of the Indo-Greek kings, Menander, converted to Buddhism. This is just an example. Naturally, he had been the patron of the style he was used to, which was frozen movements. Similarly, the large part of Greek population embraced Buddhism and hence blended the idea of frozen movements with Buddha. To top it all, around this time, a century here and there, Kushan Empire ruled the vast territory erstwhile ruled by the Mauryan dynasty. King Kanishka was dedicated to Buddhism to the extent that he even convened a Buddhist council. In the Kushan Empire, the royals aspired to be depicted as divine figures. Due to that reason, some Buddha statues appeared during that period where we can find all the influence of kingship and Greekhood. Check out the Greek sculptures of the day in the internet. You will see the fold of the clothes are very similar to that of Buddha sculpture during Kushan period. Also, a halo behind the head of Buddha implies that Buddha already attained complete divinehood by then in the form of idol. Curiously, in some cases, Buddha also dons a mustache, more like the warrior kings. Can you imagine today? Ironically, Buddha appeared even clad with jewelries. Moreover, Buddha stands alone in a gesture in all the statues, as if Buddha in move was captured. This was exactly the Western way all the time. As explained already, not a story, but a climatic moment was depicted in Western style. Curiously, the early Buddhist reliefs never depicted Buddha in human form. Buddha was depicted through symbol of peepal tree and so on. Of course, it aligned with exactly what Buddha preached, giving serious importance to the manifestation of nature in human form is a source of agony and suffering on earth. To explain this, I would like to share a story. The disciple is asked, if you find Buddha is blocking your way, what should you do? The answer is, I shall slash the Buddha with my sword. This means Buddha in human form can be source of obsession and impediment on the way to enlightenment. One should not be fanatic about anything, not even the Buddha. That was Buddha's teaching. But well, this is a Zen story, and Zen originated from Mahayana Buddhism that led to Buddha sculptures in India or elsewhere. But we must remember that Zen evolved out of not only Mahayana Buddhism, but also from Taoism. And Tao was very similar to the original teachings of Buddha. You can see the divide here. In India, Hinduism and hence idolatry blended with Mahayana Buddhism, leading to sculptures of the Buddha in human form. On the other hand, in China, the same Mahayana Buddhism blended with Tao to give birth to Zen that did not recognize Buddha in human form. Of course, as explained in the earlier episode, the competitive pressure from emerging idolatry in Hinduism did influence the emergence of idol worship among Buddhists. In the lighter vein, we can see that the first Hindutva movement in history was so powerful that it altered the course of Buddhism in India and also deleted the existence of the most powerful empire for almost two millenniums. Ashoka's empire, I mean. It quite reminds me of the novel of George Orwell, 1984. Even if he wrote this novel about a dystopian world at a different time and place, it is valid all the time. Attempts have always been made and are being made to rewrite history by self-appointed dictators wherever there is a chance. But the irony is, truth has patience, but not infinite. It shows up in the end. Jokes apart, we can see that countless complex factors influenced Indian art scene during the early phase of the first millennium CE. But this is the tip of the iceberg, just the beginning of the journey of the Indian art. In the following episodes, we shall see how topsy-turvy the ride of Indian art had been through the centuries to come.